Welcome to Nicest Nation. I am your host, Jason. Please remember to like, subscribe, and leave us a 5-star rating and review. It really helps us out, and it helps us to reach more listeners. Welcome back to Nicest Nation. I am your host, Jason. We have a really good show for you guys today. We have Nick Gottfried from...
Nick with Nicest here.
So, also, we have Isabel Lucero, and let's just get right into
it. Let's get right into it.
And Isabel, I'm going to let you start off and just tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about the company you work for, and just, you know, who you are.
Sounds great. I'm excited to be here. I'm the brand new compliance and education officer at J.T. Eaton. So I did come from academia. I have a master's degree in entomology, and I've gotten to interact with J.T. Eaton over the years. And Dale Baker, my boss, is awesome and offered me this great job. So I kind of do what a technical director does with my company. And we are a manufacturing company creating some of the best pest control products in the industry.
Awesome. So Nick, tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Nick Gottfried. I'm also from the entomology background. I did not get my master's. I just grabbed the undergrad and went straight into the industry. And then the way that I ended up at Nicest was after a couple years in the service side, I started making some connections on the supply side, one of which being Marty from the salesperson for the Texas and Oklahoma area. And then she connected me here, and I think Nicest is the best science company that I could have ever ended up at, because I get to do a little bit of everything.
That's awesome. So you say the best science company. Do you want to go a little bit into that?
Sure. So Isabel works with JT, and they develop rodent boxes, different kinds of trap materials, and then also they do so much more. They've got their own rodenticides, their own pesticide products, and then on the Nicest side, we're more of a chemical manufacturing company, right? And then also a chemical development company. And my favorite part of the pest industry was always the different products and the different niches and things that they fix. Sorry, I had a call. The different questions and problems that the different chemicals could solve. And the reason that I enjoyed Nicest so much was because there's such a focus on this being better science for a better world, finding more sustainable and more effective control methods for pests and some replacements to pest products. But at the same time, this industry is big enough that there's enough business for everybody.
Yeah, definitely. So Isabel, can you tell everyone just how you got into the whole, entomology and just like your background? I mean, how do you get into bugs, right?
Yes, this is the question I get asked the most. I think Nick probably knows exactly what I'm talking about, where someone says, what do? And you tell them your job, but you also say, I'm an entomologist. And they're like, I could never do that. Great for you, but I could never do that. And I always start with, I love insects, all kinds of insects, but it doesn't mean I want a cockroach crawling in my hair. Like, when I love insects, I'm not trying to like eat a grub out in my yard every day. I just find them fascinating and interesting. So I was born loving insects just around me. I grew up in the desert, so insects are everywhere. And my mom has a very holistic view. So we had insects in our house, not pest species, just occasional invaders that would come in, and I loved it. I was always holding whatever was available, Jerusalem cricket in my hand, kissing for the photo. And I just kind of followed that train through academia. But I went in for environmental science, so I didn't know that entomology was a career. I didn't even know that wasn't something advertised to me. I just kind of stumbled upon it while trying to follow an environmental degree through conservation. And once I discovered it, I was like, I can make money, play with bugs, help people, all kind of accumulating into a career that'll last a whole lifetime, where your job security is basically promised you can move around, but you always have amazing opportunities. I mean, the pest control industry is so big, but pest control, or I should say urban entomology, is just one aspect of being an entomologist. So I'm really happy I went that direction because, you know, there's taxonomists. Nick knows all about this too, but when I
forensic entomologist too, for the people that have a really good stomach for freaky stuff.
That's like, my next
life. Bug people and forensic entomology freaks us out.
What? No.
Maybe just me. Maybe just me.
That was always.
Did you do some projects?
I maybe made a few visits to the morgue, but no, not really. I think I would have liked to, but what people don't realize about forensic entomology is that to truly work on the front lines with it, you have to go through a challenging course that surpasses a PhD by 10 miles. I mean, you're basically also getting certified to be in law enforcement. It's crazy. Not to go off on a tangent, but if I had another...
And the legal background or like the legal training that you need just to be an expert witness and everything like that is pretty extensive.
It's crazy. But my continue. Next life, I cut you I'll off. Do that. No, no.
I cut you off on the forensic entomology thing.
No. I don't have any experience. Just in my heart, I do.
I'll put that on a job on the next job application. Not that I'm ever going to make one, but then like, I don't have experience, but in my heart, I do.
In my heart, I have all the experience.
And she did mention one thing that was pretty true about the pest industry is that it's absolute job security. It'll never go anywhere. Cause as long as there's people trying to develop new areas into where nature is. And every time that people in nature cross over, there's going to be some kind of pest industry need. And then also it's something that doesn't get affected by markets. It doesn't get affected too heavily by markets, doesn't get affected too heavily by like big world events. Like for instance, the pandemic in 2020 was phenomenal for pest control because that was when people started spending more time at home and noticing some more things. So the pest industry, the jobs in the pest industry never went away. If anything, grew during some of the tougher times. And that's one thing that I've really appreciated about my time in this industry is that there's never not been opportunity.
Exactly.
And even like between companies as well, whenever we go to the big conventions, Pest World and stuff like that, many of the sales reps had either started at a different company but still have a relationship with their old company, or all of the sales reps know each other. There's so much business around, and it's such a, I'm going to say, a kind field. This isn't a place where everybody has to be a shark and try to outcompete each other. And the cooperation's pretty great. You'll always have connections to friends at every other company, and hence why Nisus and JT, we sponsored the Pest Roundup. I think it was it. What was it? The Pest Posse. That's right.
Yeah, Pest Posse TV. Yeah.
We did the Pest Posse TV, and then also we've got a couple product crossovers. Even there's a lot of room in this industry, and everyone gets along.
Yeah. And I mean, it doesn't mean we're not competing. Like everybody wants to promote their own products. But I think something I value about the industry is that we don't have to bring someone else down to make our products look good. Like your products can speak for themselves by their efficacy. If they're not working, you know, that you'll see that from results. So I think that's really good for us in general because it helps people to help each other. I mean, a lot of the advancements that we've seen happen, especially recently, have happened because companies are beginning to say, how can we help people? Let's make that our priority. And if we focus on that, we can take each other's ideas and each other's resources and combine them. Because that's what we do, right? It's healthcare.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. And the whenever people ask me what I do, it's always like I say killing bugs and giving hugs just to kind of just make the rhyme, but it's more fixing bug issues and then also giving hugs and being able to help folks out. That's one thing that was nice about the service side. Whenever I spent my years on the, like going to houses and fixing problems, that was always the instant reward, was being able to see the difference that you're making in someone's life. Who's not like us, where we grew up grabbing the bugs outside and bringing them in to show our parents. Most people are looking for a service, looking for someone else to take care of the bug issue for them. Hence why we're all gainfully employed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mentioned something to you yesterday, Nick. I was like, yeah, I don't do bugs.
Yeah, you did. All. You did say that. And I was like, you know, you're working in a great place
for
that.
I know. But I mean, I was the kid that, you know, whenever I went fishing with my dad, he would mm-hmm. have to put the worm on the hook because I didn't want to touch the worm.
You didn't want to touch the worm? No. Oh, when I was really little, this might freak my parents out that I'm putting this out to the world that they let this happen. But my sister, my sister was 3 or something. And I would go find all of the worms in our yard and stuff and give them to her. And she just put them in her mouth and eat them. And then that freaked out my parents a lot. But I maybe that core memory of just like going and finding every creepy crawly in the yard to give to my sister to see if she would eat it. That was the beginning. That might have been one of the beginnings of when bugs became cool to me.
Yeah. Well, insects and worms, I mean, they're a good protein source.
They are.
Seriously.
They are. Chitin is not too bioavailable as a protein when you eat it, but it's still makes for some pretty interesting snacks.
I mean, insects are consumed across the world. If you think mm-hmm. about it, insects are like the largest protein source without consuming, and what someone check me and be like, that's not true at all. But without consuming like straight red meat, I'm pretty sure the next is insects. I mean, mm-hmm. not mass wise, but
they're some of the most efficient converters of like feed material to protein. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'm just pulling out fake facts, but in my mind, in my heart, it's true.
No, they're. But in my heart, it's true. But no, you're absolutely right. Around the world, so many cultures, like American culture obviously hasn't taken to it too well yet, but so many cultures around the world, especially any areas that are looking for ways to supplement their diets with protein. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, the grub in the grub underneath the bark of a tree or something doesn't sound too delicious to us, but there are a couple cultures that like it a lot. I mean, hey, even Hispanic cultures, they like having a grub in a mezcal bottle.
Yeah, true.
Yep.
Yeah.
And plus the, what are they called? Lemon ants? I can't remember if it's...
Yeah, yeah.
But they taste
lemonade
like
lemonade ants?
Yeah, they taste like lemon.
And there's a couple ants. There's a couple desert ants. I don't know if they're in the United States. I need to be checked on that. Honeypot ants. And they're desert ants that use some of their colony to just store nectar in their bodies. And supposedly if you eat them, it's just like a fruit gusher, but you know, it's got 6 legs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I was in Australia, we went into the Daintree and we were eating green tree ants, and they're sour. I wonder if they're related to the lemon ants, because they're sour like that, kind of like a lemon. But the whole point was you needed to eat them before they bit your tongue. So you're like crazily chewing as quickly as you can, because you're like, who's going to bite who first?
Yeah.
Food fights back. Yeah. Imagine if you had to do that with every chicken nugget you ate. Like there's a chance that this thing's about to peck you back.
I think I'd stop eating chicken nuggets.
Oh, I wouldn't. I love chicken nuggets too much. Even if they were slightly threatening, that wouldn't stop me. So, okay. Isabel, when did you, or maybe not when, but whenever you were in school, you went to Clemson for your undergrad, University of Kentucky for your grad degree. And yes. At any point in your schooling, was there obvious opportunities that pest control is open and interested in hiring entomologists? Was that delivered to you somehow, or did you have to go find it?
Sure. But yeah, Nicella, I'm teasing you because my name's not Isabella, but Nicella.
Did I say Isabella?
You did, but it's cool. I answer by many I names.
I think I called you Isabella also, didn't I?
You did. Most and that's that, do. That's what probably threw me off. Okay, so I will answer to Nicella for the rest of this podcast. Nicella.
If it's easier too, you can call me Izzy.
Izzy? Okay.
Izzy's a good nickname for me.
Well, that's what I knew you as first. So
yeah. But I feel like that question is so important because I don't feel like the opportunities I got are equal across the board. So I love the grad school I went to, and it provided me those opportunities. I did not have to seek them out. But I think that's because of the professors specifically who are teaching at my university and their history. Because I talk to a lot of other entomologists that I meet at like ESA, so it's not as urban. We still have a MOVE section, which is for urban entomologists, but a lot of them more study, less applied research, and more intellectual theorized research, and they don't get those opportunities generally, and they also don't hear a lot about the industry, which was crazy because I studied under Dr. Zachary DeVries, who is an industry well-known name, does a lot of outreach and extension. So he gave me opportunities to talk, took me to pest control conferences, helped me to get into the CEU speaking circuit before I even graduated. So I got those handed to me, and I cannot be more thankful because I would never want to be in any other career path. I love the industry. I'm never leaving. I do not plan to go back and be a professor. No, thank you. But to think if I didn't have him there and have other people around me who are giving me those opportunities, I might have never heard about the industry. And I don't even know what that would have been like. But after I was given those resources, I followed up on them. And I was the one who was like, this is as awesome as it sounds. This is where I want to be. And I also made an effort to get even more involved, talk to people, make friends. And that helped a lot. So did being an intern at MPMA. So I was one of the mm-hmm. little student interns at Pest World.
Was it PyKai?
No, it's through MPMA. They offer it. And so you run a lot of the different scan tables at Pest World.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's a great place to make those connections. I'd been wanting to go to a Pest World since I started on the service side years ago. And this year finally got the opportunity to go. That was so much fun.
Were
so many people to meet. And then, so like you said, so many connections. And making that getting there as an intern in the first place before you've even entered the full sphere, that must have been a great advantage.
It was. Yeah. But sorry.
No, you go.
Go ahead.
Nicella, yeah.
Nicella. How did your experience differ from mine? Because I'm curious, because I was kind of put in the straight line to meet people in the industry. Did you have mm-hmm. that experience?
No, Oklahoma State's entomology program is fantastic, but there is some opportunities to get connected with pest control companies because a couple Oklahoma State graduates would go on to form pest control companies, and a lot of times if they gave back to the university or if they just had a close connection with it, like during some of my introduction undergrad classes, some guest speakers would be like people that ran pest control companies in Oklahoma that had graduated from OSU. And so that was kind of an opening, but that was only service side. There wasn't any kind of supply side or even a corporate side of like a Terminix or Orkin or any of the large companies hiring entomologists. There wasn't any opportunities that I saw like that as an undergrad. But one of those Oklahoma State graduates who made a company, ended up selling it to a larger company, and then I got an internship through that large company. That path brought me to the service side straight out of undergrad, though. And thankfully, like I said, like I mentioned about the pandemic, like I graduated spring of 2020, and that was the semester that the world changed a little bit. And a lot of my friends had job opportunities that dried up because the world was changing and businesses didn't know how much hiring they would be able to do. Pest control, I had every single opportunity on the service side still right in front of me. And then from there, that's when I got introduced to the supply side. So different from you in that you went to the academic side and then entered the supply side through the CEU courses and through NPMA. You got to see the support structure behind the service industry. And then I went into the service industry first and then transferred back over to the supply side. And yeah, it did mean that I had to do a little bit more crawl space work, had to do a little bit more attic work than you were forced to, I think, although I'm sure you've been in plenty doing some surveying and some work, but it did end up still getting me to where I wanted to be, which was on the supply side, on the development side of pest control.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's really good to emphasize here that there's no right way.
There's multiple paths, which is so cool. Yes.
Yeah. There's all the ways that you can be introduced, you know, and everybody adds so much, especially from having different backgrounds, different paths, different experiences.
Mm-hmm. And you don't need a PhD in order to make entomology work as a career. And that's the thing that that's one of the reasons that I was so excited to do this podcast was that undergrad, master's, and also how many of like my co-salesmen just graduated high school. So many of them, they ended up working on the service side straight out of high school and then made their way to the supply side. And then a lot of them weren't even in pest control. A lot of them came from uniform companies, like working for Univar and stuff like that. And then ending up going from Univar, going to a large pest control company, and then ending up on the supply side. So I think that the pest control industry is something that's so easy to break into. You just have to know that it's open and look for the opportunity. And you don't even have to look for the opportunity a lot of times. Go ahead.
Oh, no. On my case.
In your case, your school and your professor's process alone brought you straight in to the industry.
Yes. Yeah. And I did direct applied research. So my research will help to guide the industry.
Are you peer reviewed yet?
Not yet. I'm still in the application process.
It's coming.
Yeah.
I'll redo my dues to ESA and stuff whenever that comes around.
Thank you. Yeah. I can also just send it to you. Fingers crossed. But, you know, you said you don't need a PhD. You also don't need a master's. You don't need a degree to be successful in the industry. But I think we'd also be remiss if we didn't mention the benefit of having an entomology degree, because you don't need it to be successful in the industry. But there's ways that having a degree or having somebody with an entomology degree at your company can increase your success. If you want to touch on that, Nick.
I was able to jump. I was able to skip a couple lines on the service side because of that entomology degree. In Texas specifically, to become a certified applicator. I imagine that other states are similar, but to become a certified applicator for termite treatments in order to basically have your own company, having certified applicators licenses necessary. And there are experience requirements and apprenticeship requirements that a lot of those can be skipped buy a biology degree that's somewhat related to the pest control industry, and entomology, of course, sends you over the line on that. And my first job straight out of college was, yeah, I was partially a specialty technician, but more of like, I was the ringer to bring in whenever the problem at a specific residence was not being resolved in due time. So basically, if the roaches were fighting back enough, then they'd send me. And that, having that background knowledge of maybe a deeper level of understanding on the target pests did help me so much.
Yeah, for sure. Because having that degree behind you, not that anyone needs it, you know, experience is just as valuable. But having an entomology degree and coming into the industry like you did, Nick, it gives you that, again, that holistic viewpoint for when an issue isn't getting solved. You're like, okay, what are we missing? We need to look at all these different pieces, the behavior, the resistance. Is it physiological? What's happening? What is this whole ecosystem contributing to this problem? And I think that that's a viewpoint a lot of people have, but then a lot of people also weren't trained that way, or they just haven't gotten there yet. So it helps to have that training from school sometimes to maybe be, what are we missing?
Absolutely. And I was able to be a bigger resource to my teams because of it. And I imagine the same thing is true of you. Well, you've got teammates that they'll message you, say, hey, what is this? Give me a more technical description of this. And it's not that they can't figure this information out by themselves. It's that you get to be that one-stop shop for a little bit of extra trivia knowledge, a little bit of extra sales pitch material. And then also insect ID is one of the most important parts of pest control. And yeah, I see you excited about that. I take it you get a decent amount of pictures sent by numbers that you don't even know in your phone. You're like, new phone, who this? And it's like, oh, it's your aunt. I saw this bug outside and I was wondering if this is dangerous. No, it's a box elder bug. You're okay. But yeah. Is that pretty relatable?
Oh my gosh. I mean, so I was never a technician. I only ever did applications for research-based projects. Mm-hmm. So I haven't actually gotten a lot of the experience you have, but oh my gosh, the pictures I get, and they're always blurry, and they're always out of focus, and they're like, what is this? And I would go, honestly, it looks like a dot, but if you can get a better photo, I would love to help, but I don't know what it is.
As a PSA to anyone who knows an entomologist and is going to send a picture to try to get some ID, a further away, more in focus picture is better than getting the camera right against it. Because yeah, it might not be big and we might not be able to see specific little things, but just being able to see the shapes of its legs, the shapes of its head, the shape of its like abdomen, or if it's a beetle, the elytra on it. Just the shapes of things can usually point us in the right direction.
Yes, that is... Thank you for that PSA, but I will also
we can get stuff down to order just based on silhouette.
Definitely. And send it to us. We're nerds. We live for this. Like, I will take any opportunity to look at random pictures of bugs. Like, this is our lives. I just can't help you, and neither can Nick if it, I don't know what it is.
We waited until adulthood for our obsession with bugs to be cool and useful. When we were little kids, it wasn't. When we were in middle school, it wasn't very helpful that like Nick can throw up his hand and then say a cool bug fact at any time. But now we've got jobs that can require it. Now we can feel cool. Makes us feel useful whenever we get the texts from family members and friends of, hey, what's this? Just a couple days ago, one of my sister's good friends from her childhood had a wheel bug, an assassin bug, outside of their front door. And then she's like, what's this? And then the next picture, it's on her hand. And I was like, hey, that's just don't mess with it too much. That's an assassin bug. It's got an extremely painful bite. Just don't, maybe push it off onto a leaf somewhere and you're good to go. And Thankfully, no bites, no issues like that. I dissected one of those one time. Like a whole fifth of their body cavity is just saliva glands.
Oh god!
Because they have to melt everything that they eat, so then they can drink it like a straw. Doesn't that make you feel good, Jason?
Yes, yeah. Great.
Isn't that pretty cool? Yeah.
I also weirdly chose the wheel bug to be a dissection specimen for a project. I just feel really? Like they're like interesting. I don't know. I mean. There's many true bugs around constantly, and they all kind of work similarly. It's just what is their targeted food. But, I mean, it's just so cool. I mean, let's also remember their relative who causes us all the headaches, the bed bug.
Yeah. Oh, bed bugs. I was walking to class one day, and I saw a bed bug on the back of my friend's sleeve. Like walking down the back of his sleeve, and ran up to him, grabbed it off of him, and I'm like, "Hey, man, this is a bed bug on my thumb right here." He's like, "No, it's not." I'm like, "Dude, you know why I'm here? This is a bed bug." And sure enough, there was a heat treatment that happened at that dorm.
Yes, that's always the
test. Actually, it wasn't a dorm; it was an apartment. Do not sue me, Oklahoma State. You don't have bed bugs. They do a good job there.
No, but you said, you know, we love getting the please identify this until I'm like, that is without a doubt a bed bug. And then they're like, I'm going to burn my house down. And I'm like, just don't do that. Nope. That's what the industry is here for. That's what we do all that research, all that training, continued education courses, is so that you don't have to throw out every single piece of furniture and you don't have to move out of your house and sell it for a loss. We can help you, you know. That's what we're here for.
Sounds like a financial nightmare. The sell for a loss just because of bed bugs.
Oh my gosh. The amount of people who I've told them, okay, what you're seeing are bed bugs. And then they're like, okay, I'm going to get rid of all my stuff. I'm like,
that's not how it's going to get fixed.
Call someone. That's what we do. We can help you. Yep.
And then, of course, you guys being a supplier, you have so many companies that you sell to, and then you get to recommend them, bring their business up as well. And it's a very co-supportive industry.
Yes. Yeah. We don't do any treatments ourselves. Seeing bed bugs was just through academia, where we more just send to distributors, but we still interact directly with our clients buying through the distributors. So that's really cool because we get to talk to them about our products, and they have another resource, which is their local distributor, to help them even more since we're sending products everywhere.
Yep. And one thing that I also wanted to mention, I know we had moved away a little bit from the opportunities that we were finding with different degree levels and stuff like that, but also that I felt like at the beginning of, so you and I were talkers. We're pretty verbose for entomologists. Like it's a wide spectrum of people that are in ento courses. The lovely students from University of Kentucky students that we were hanging out with in Denver.
It wasn't all, but a heavy number of them are my lab mates who I'm obsessed with. So
yeah, they were super fun. They were super fun, but there's different levels of, I'm going to say, talkativeness in those groups. And then my graduating class of entomologists at Oklahoma State was a very wide range, and I was definitely on the more verbose side. And now I'm seeing more opportunities for people that, even if they're more research focused, they're a little bit less, maybe they might be a little bit less sales focused. They might be a little bit more focused on their work and on their research. There's more opportunities for that coming up as well. Orkin recently announced that they're changing their technical division to Orkin Entomology. And then Terminix, you and I got to see the Rent-A-Kill Terminix research facility down in Dallas. And the young entomologists that they hired there to do research on termites, mosquitoes, German roaches. There's a lot of opportunity, not just for the talkers of the bug class.
Yeah, there's space for everyone. And you don't have to be the most outgoing person you know to be in the industry. Not everybody is on the front lines talking, like me and Nick. You know, there's all kinds of positions that are equally, if not more, successful. It just depends on what you like. And one of those people who were doing the research that we got to meet was a member of my old lab, Sudeep Gaye. So
he's so cool.
Oh my gosh. He's the coolest. But, you know, he loves research. He loves it. Mm-hmm. So he always wanted to go into the industry, as far as I was aware. And he found a spot that really suits him, which is kind of similar to academia. You're still performing very applied research, investigating problems, but that just has a more direct route to the industry.
Yep. And he was doing the stuff on ants, right? Rover ants?
I think that he was doing a lot of the pest cockroach species work, but I think that it's fluid and I'm not positive exactly what he was doing, especially because they're just starting. But I think everybody gets to kind of explore whatever pest species they're interested in, maybe.
Yep. All right. And the students that we mentioned, like your old lab mates, had a wide range of things that they were all studying. From German roach proteins all the way to mosquito issues.
Yes. And, you know, proteins, allergens from proteins are a huge emerging field in academia. And I know it's now translating also to the industry, where allergens are beginning to be discovered in so many more places than we thought. And I think that's important because the industry's always cared about people's health, but you can't help what you don't know is there. So with this new emerging research, we're like, whoa, we have these allergens affecting people in the carpets from the bed bugs. It's not just the bed bug skins, the bed bug poop. It's in the carpets. It's everywhere. So I think that this new emerging research is going to have trickle down effects, which is also a great reason for entomologists to speak up in the industries, because they're able to have these connections to academia. So they can say, hey guys, I know someone who just published this paper, and we could realize that maybe we can improve our products, improve our techniques from emerging research that might not have reached the industry yet through the normal pathways.
Oh yeah. Well, all you have to do is ask any entomologist, what's your favorite bug? And then they're not going to give you an answer. They're not going to give you one answer.
No.
Nope. It's going to be like, oh, I like this. I like this family. I just like beetles in general. I think they're cute. Or I really dig this aspect of what some insects and what some arachnids do. Like, I like the things that sting. I like the things that have colonies. And then it's they'll give you an umbrella of things to fall under. And I think that's pretty funny.
Why would you like things that sting? I mean, come on.
There's something.
Who likes things that sting?
I'm about to explain it, because I'm one of those people. I think that the things that sting are just so cool. There's something incredible about, so venom is typically super, super well folded proteins, like just specially molded proteins that are meant to either do damage, like break down other things. So enzymatic proteins. So things that break stuff down, or sometimes they're just neurotoxins and all they're doing is making nerves fire, making pain happen. So that being such a specific, perfectly made molecule for what it does, which usually hurts a lot, but a bug can just make that by eating something else and turning it into a juice that has magical properties. Yeah, it's painful, but still pretty incredible. That's the aspect that gets to me. So Isabel, is there a thing that arthropods do that blows your mind that you always try to learn more about? Or
oh my gosh, well, you made a really good point about the interesting aspects of stinging insects. I think I just like battling with danger. But I don't know. I mean, every insect is so different. they're amazing. I have my pet non-insect over there. I have a curly hair tarantula. And I mean, she's venomous, but I love her. I also am not stupid, and I'm not going to go poke her in the face and be like, gee, I don't know why my spider bit me. But I think maybe just the power they hold and the,
they can be so small yet so impactful.
Yes. And it's just very interesting, like brown recluses. So for a while I was rearing them in school, which I'm not an arachnologist. You know, a lot of people are, they, when you say entomologist, they're like, what is this worm? What is this spider? And I love all living things. So sometimes I know, but I'm like, believe it or not, neither of those are insects. So I haven't spent educational classes on them. But with the brown recluse, I got to know it pretty well. And for something that makes us so afraid, something that just the idea of it is just
fear. Jason, the moment she said brown recluse, you felt that in your spine.
The brown recluse wants to bite you so little that often it will let you kill it before it bites you. They are not interested in that. That is energy taking, which they would rather save to find food. They're timid. They're shy. They want to be left alone. And so something that can cause so much fear and yet is so uninterested in causing any harm, that's what really draws me to a lot of venomous things. It's like, wow, you know, a yellow jacket, he wants to sting you. Like, he's looking for a reason to ruin your day. But not a brown recluse, who is the much more dangerous foe. He just wants to be alone.
Mm-hmm. It very, very interesting perspectives on two of them. Because I see it, I see yellow jackets the same way that you see brown recluses.
Oh, really?
I'm like, well, they have a mission. They have kids to feed. They're, what's the quickest way to find this energy? It's sugars. It's sugar water, which Americans, we've typically got a soda open somewhere or something like that. And it's going to search for that food. But there's a big protective giant over that food. So I can see why. And yellow jackets are pretty small in terms of wasps. Proper yellow jackets, like not European hornets or anything. They're pretty small. Right. So they have to make up for it with aggression. They have to be little honey badgers, each of them. Ooh, and
that's a good point. Maybe I'll and forget so them.
It, like, there's always those little extra perspectives. And that's one thing that I just had so much fun learning in school and out of school as well.
So I have a really good yellow jacket story.
Yeah. Oh,
sure.
You get lit up.
Yeah. So at my parents' house, some yellow jackets built a nest outside my window and I didn't know it was there. And I like to sleep with my windows open. So I opened it one night and then I guess I disturbed it. I don't know. But I woke up to being stung multiple times. So, cause the window was right next to my bed. So yeah, it was not fun.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, luckily, I wasn't allergic, so.
Yeah. Yeah, especially being woken up. And that sting. So I'm a beekeeper. I get stung by bees somewhat regularly. Not too regularly. It's been a little while, but I haven't been doing as much work lately. But I've been stung by bees somewhat fair often. It's nothing compared to a yellow jacket, man. It's another little level of pain. And then whenever I was a kid, I ran across a railroad tie that had a yellow jacket nest underneath and I got lit up. I had like 16 stings or something.
Gosh.
And being woken, being as a kid, I can still remember that pretty clearly. And if you were woken up from sleep by that,
it was bad.
Oh, that's horrible. Yeah.
I've never been stung by a bee or wasp. Or bitten by
anything serious? Nothing?
I mean, fire ants, but with like
flying. Oh, they don't count. They don't count.
But no, and I used to work with bees too. I think, you know, knock on wood, but I don't know. Maybe I just have a calming presence about me.
You're the Snow White of bugs. Like they just want to. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you sing a note and wasps come and land on your hand. Yeah, no.
I'm definitely gonna have no friends after this. I'll be like, is he can never sing publicly again.
Yep. They're gonna be worried that you're attracting too much. One thing that I actually found very interesting was how much interest I had in wildlife control after getting into the pest industry, how quickly I was able to pick up rodent control, rodent behavior study and stuff like that. It's similar languages to entomology, to bug science. And actually same with my official title for NYSIS is that I'm on the industrial side of NYSIS's business. So NYSIS does professional pest products, of course, and a lot of times we'll talk with pest professionals on this show and otherwise, but then the industrial side is a lot of what NYSIS does, treating railroad ties, telephone poles, and sill plating, like larger scale products that our treatment is not applied by a technician, but rather it's applied during a construction process in a facility or at a sawmill. And that world was completely new to me, but having that background from my pest control side, from the entomology side, similar language all around. And then I was able to, I've been able to start learning that this year. And so I feel like I could, from my entomological and pest control background, I could do really any kind of tech sales or tech, technical education. I think it's a pretty versatile opportunity. Was there anything, Isabel, after you got to JT Eaton that you just started picking up a little bit easier than you thought?
I mean, Nick, you're speaking straight gold. That's how I feel exactly. Like, I got into the industry and instantly I was like really interested in rodents. You know, we make some rodenticides, we have rodent bait stations, we have all kinds of rodent products, and I knew nothing about rodents. I mean, I sat in some talks through academia, but coming in, I suddenly, just like you, I was really interested. It's I guess maybe a passion for living things, mm-hmm. including people, just kind of translates across the board. And I've been at JT Eaton, I'm approaching a year, so not even that long. I'm probably not even
Congratulations.
Approaching. Thank you. I'm very new. And I'm already giving rodent continued education talks. It just, I don't know, the passion, I feel like it just spreads so easily. Mm-hmm. Like, give me something new. You know, and I know you're the same way. We've talked about this a lot, and I'm like, woo, let's roll with this. You know, it's hard to turn it off the excitement once it's on.
Exactly. And if there was as big of an industry for reptile pest control as there was for insect pest control, that's probably what I would be doing instead, just because every kind of creepy crawly always interested me. When I was in middle school, didn't have friends, I had woods. Like to go play in, and that time frame or that just interest in living things, like you said, transfers to everything. It's just that the opportunities are really there for entomology, for pest control, and you know, maybe one day reptiles will start taking over. Like Florida has a lot of reptile mm-hmm. issues right now. Maybe one day the reptile or the fish side of pest control industry might grow, and then those opportunities will open up as well. But for now, I do see entomology as one of entomology, and then just general biology being so useful for a pest control industry. But who knows? Maybe I'll move to Florida and go be a Florida man, go find turtles and deal with iguana issue. Iguanas wrecking foundations in Florida is ridiculous right now. And I would love to be a part of a team that like tries to develop a solution to that in some way.
There's also not only iguanas, but like anacondas that
Burmese pythons.
Pythons is what it is, where the people buy them and then release them into the wild. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
And one thing that was also pretty interesting was that, so Burmese pythons start showing up in numbers, bird populations are dropping, and they're like, oh, the Burmese pythons are whacking all the birds.
Yeah.
They were putting pressure on the birds, but they weren't the most lethal thing. The most lethal thing was feral cats.
Really?
Yeah. It was like cats that get out of the house and stay out of the house, breed, and they're wrecking the birds. Now, yeah, Burmese pythons were ruining like small animal ecosystems as well. But yeah, they got bad rap that cats should also have gotten a little bit of too. Yeah. Any kind of invasive species is going to put a lot of pressure on stuff.
So I said anaconda. Are you allowed to own anaconda?
Or you can own them.
You really? Okay, yeah. Cool.
You can own them. It depends on state. It's a state-by-state legislature on what kind of animals can be owned. But yeah, there's green anacondas in personal collections in America. They're usually pretty feisty. They can be pretty feisty.
Yeah.
And so, and also they get so big. It's the largest. It's the heaviest snake on earth.
Yeah, definitely.
Not for me. Not for me. I like snakes, but maybe not one that could like bust my head like a grape.
Yeah.
That's too much.
Definitely.
That's too much power for a pet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I don't have lions.
Oh, that's why?
Lions are cool, but
yeah,
I'm not Mike Tyson. No.
Well, the feral cats in Florida, you know, I haven't heard that much about the feral cat problem, though I believe you 1,000,000,000%. But I think that also brings up the question that everybody asks a lot, which is, what's a pest? And it's subjective. I mean, it depends on your own perspective, the situation, what's happening. So I would say, you know, I love cats, I love dogs, I love all animals. But in this case, the feral cats are a pest problem. So you need somebody to be able to help control them. And very clear, control doesn't always mean get rid of. It just means to help curb this issue.
That's one thing. Like,
I think we're going out there like whacking off feral cats, you know? That's not what we're doing.
I mean, catching and spaying and neuters, you know, just you know, cut down the population and all that stuff. Yeah, it's very important.
And then one thing, Isabel, have you given any integrated pest management talks yet? Like IPM stuff or?
I would say all of my talks are IPM oriented. I don't think I've ever given
a non-IPM-oriented talk.
But I've never given a talk that only talks about IPM. But, you know, you can't have pest control without IPM.
Mm-hmm. And that IPM approach, the integrated pest management of, there's so many different levels to pest management. Like you said, it's not just applying whatever the most lethal chemical possible is to eliminate as many as you can. Sometimes it's just reducing conducive conditions, reducing factors that lead to that growth, and sometimes introducing factors that put pressure on them, like predatory insects and stuff like that. And that that IPM world has been developed over the past, I don't know, I think it's been a term for 20 years at this point, but that world of IPM has been developed by both the service side and the academic side of the pest control industry. We've got so many opportunities to improve what we already do well, and that's one of them that is going to continue to grow.
Yeah.
It's even as simple as making sure all the screens on your windows are well sealed. That's a method of IPM, integrated pest management. So then you're going to have less spider intrusions, and if your screen is cut on a window, wasps can enter through that hole and then put a protected nest in between the screen and the window. Having proper screens eliminates that.
Yeah.
Door sweeps, everything.
And IPM's been around since, I mean, the 1970s. I mean, it's something that's existed for a long time. I mean, over 20 years. But I think the point Nick was making is that we didn't implement it like we should that whole time that it existed. I mean, after DDT got banned, that's when IPM started getting talked about. But only recently, I would say relatively recently, have we put an emphasis on, okay, wait, IPM can't just be something we put in place saying, hey, let us do what we want. We're doing IPM. Like, now we're really saying we want our earth to last. We want humans to stay safe. We are worried about emerging issues. How can we tackle all of this without causing harm?
IPM.
IPM.
There's definitely a t-shirt. There's some t-shirt opportunities in there for sure. Like maybe acronym, like I Incredible or something like that. There's been some solid shirts. There's been some solid pest control t-shirts over time. Like the Pest Posse one with the, what was on the Pest Posse shirt that had?
Oh yeah. It was a rat watching TV or something. And he had a lasso.
Mm-hmm. There was a cock. Oh, it was a, was it a cockroach like riding a rat with a lasso?
Maybe. I have the shirt. Okay. I can't remember.
You have the shirt?
Yeah. I can't remember what it was.
There's been some cute ones. There's been some good ones. Now, one of them that got floated by someone. I won't say who floated it, but I know that NPMA is going to Orlando next year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Orlando. And some rodent-focused companies could make a t-shirt that's Mickey Mouse stuck in a snap trap or something like that.
Get sued.
Yeah,
maybe. Make it a resemblance or an obvious parody Mickey Mouse in a snap trap.
Love it. You know, Nick, we talked about getting a big group together and going to Disney World. That would be another great opportunity for the Nicest podcast to talk about rats in a rat-centered area.
Oh my gosh, I can only imagine the rodent issues.
I know.
Because Disney's properties are basically in a swamp. They're in a swamp that's been cleaned up and then foundations have been poured and stuff like that. And that humidity level, that water table, everything is going to be every pest issue possible. And then you add in all of the concessions, all of the children, all of the living spaces nearby. The trash management must be something incredible. And oh yeah, that would be pretty interesting. I wonder if Disney would let us like go walk around at night with like black lights and headlamps trying to find issues. Man, probably not, but that could be fun.
Yeah, no. I would say that's a no.
that's going to be a no.
They wouldn't let us, but I think I could run faster.
Disney's security team is going to be like watching this video and they're like, all right, we're putting bolos out for these kids here. Like, be on the lookout for them. If you see them, they're out.
Disney security is no joke.
They're going to have to drag us kicking and screaming out of the A Bug's Life ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Bug's Life.
Dude, A Bug's Life is great. Was there a media production that you think might have been pretty formative to you? Actually, and then after she answers this, I'll ask you this, Jason, too. Like, so Isabel, was there a media production that was pretty formative to you in terms of maybe your entomological interest or just your interest in critters in general?
Yes. The Fly with Jeff Goldblum.
Yes. Oh, it's a classic.
That's a creepy one.
I love that movie. And I watched it as a child with my dad. And I was like, you know, I wasn't allowed to see the like dirty parts, but I got to see the like fly evolution. And I was just like, this is the scariest and coolest thing I've ever seen. It got me really interested in genetics, which I never fully studied. So don't ask me heavy genetics questions, but I thought that was crazy. Just the
probably
idea.
Probably done a couple genetics experiments with Drosophila. A little bit.
Haven't we all done some minor
Drosophila is fruit flies and super simple genetic code that's easily manipulatable. So you get to have some cool experiments.
Yes.
Make their eyes different colors, make them grow eyes on their legs.
Gosh, that's so weird.
Yeah.
Worst experiments are the ones you're not actually performing and Drosophila just do on their own. And you're like, oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness. How about you, Jason? If they're like, was there a media production that formed like maybe your opinion or your reaction to insects and arachnids and creepy crawlies?
Oh yeah, there was.
Yeah,
actually, there was a few, but the one that comes to mind more than anything is arachnophobia.
I saw that movie in college.
Yeah.
I feel like if I had seen that movie as a child, I would not have been going to school for bugs. That movie's pretty creepy.
Yeah,
yeah,
it is.
Do spiders freak you out still?
Not really. Some spiders do. Like, I've had black widows around my house before and stuff, mm-hmm. and they just kind of freak me out. And of course, the brown recluses, I've had some of those around my house. But like wolf spiders and stuff, I'm fine with them. I always tell my kids to, you know, catch and release. Don't, you know, step on them or anything. So, yeah.
Yeah. For me, it was, crocodile hunter, honestly. Steve Irwin, rest in peace. But it was watching Crocodile Hunter on repeat, on reruns. My grandmother would tape, like VCR tape, whenever it would come on TV, and then whenever I'd go see them, I'd just watch all of the VCR tapes that my grandmother had made. And Crocodile Hunter was definitely pretty formative. The movie Ants.
Oh, yeah.
That movie's surprisingly intense.
It is.
Like, I really like the termite ant warfare scene. And then one thing that was one of the coolest points in my research journey was getting to see, like, subterranean termites getting kind of attacked by an odorous house ant, or it wasn't even an odorous house ant, it was raspberry crazy ants in Texas, and seeing, like, breaking open a mud tube and then seeing ants and termites kind of fighting in that mud tube. That was, it's like, oh, I've seen this before. There's probably an ant named Barbados in there somewhere. Something like that.
Well, don't forget that some ants and termites work together. You know, our Asian needle ant, which is invasive to a lot of parts of the U.S., but they're here. And if you can find a nest, you might be able to find an area where they're working with some termites that they've kind of used. Kind of like how ants will use aphids sometimes. They'll ranch
them. Yep.
Yeah, they ranch the termites too. But if the termites misbehave, the ants also eat them. They're like, you're done.
Yeah, and Asian needle ants, those are stingers, right?
Yeah. I've heard it's pretty bad, but...
But you don't know. You don't know yet. You've only dealt with a couple of fire ants. Fire ant venom... So, speaking of, like, those venoms and proteins and stuff, fire ant venom is a lot of formic acid. It's actually just acidic. It's not even neurotoxin as much or anything like that. So, It just burns. It just melts. And that's why you get those little pustules and stuff. Instead of like a wasp sting, you don't usually get pustules. You get just welts.
Yeah.
But fire ants, you get little blisters.
I did not know that, Nick.
Good times.
You've taught me something new. I did not know that that was the reason, because the venom was causing, with the acid, the burning.
Mm-hmm. That's why you get blisters from fire ants, but not wasps. You don't get blisters after you get a wasp sting.
Yeah. Okay.
But fire ants, you do. Those jerks.
Yeah.
And there's a couple ants. I think they might be Australian. I don't know. It might be African as well. Or it might be American. Anyway, I know that there's ants that will detonate themselves. They've got two chambers of caustic materials in their abdomen. And it's like an AB foam where if those materials mix, then they kind of explode.
That's crazy.
And they'll suicidally kill themselves to throw acid on stuff. And crows and other birds will land in those ants and have them like burst these caustic chemicals all over the bird, because that will help it stay parasite free. Because those caustic chemicals on there are a repellent for mosquitoes and ticks.
That's amazing.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. That holistic mindset that Nick is displaying so well right now, that we can't just look at something as only what we're seeing. There's so many reasons and interactions. Maybe if you're like, oh my gosh, there's ants exploding in my yard, you'd be like, well, you have a bird problem.
Yes. Yeah. Whenever people have flea issues come up out of nowhere, it's usually that they had a pet animal that was the target of the fleas, a cat, a dog, or something like that, then something changes, and then those fleas start biting the people because they don't have their preferred food source.
Exactly.
The one thing that happens that has happened multiple times for me was go into a house that, like, okay, you guys didn't have fleas, and now you have a ton of fleas. So how did the problem ramp up without you noticing? Oh, we had a baby. We brought home the baby, and now the dog sleeps in a different room. And when that dog slept in a different room, all of the fleas that were in the room where the dog used to sleep, they needed food somewhere, so they started biting the parents. Yeah.
Fleas are no fun.
Fleas are no fun. But it,
and your carpet, they're in the upholstery. You know, if you take away their food source and you do nothing else, you still got fleas.
Fleas. They can survive forever without a meal. They're so tough.
And not me,
a lot of times they can be pretty pesticide resistant.
Yeah.
Yep. But that's one of the things that, that's one of the things that the whole point of us hopping on this podcast was for, is like, there's different ways to think about this and to see the world of pest control. And we want every brain we can get. So if this is something that interests you, by all means, give it a check, reach out, talk to pest control companies in your local area. Even if you're just a biologist, see what kind of opportunities and connections you can make through that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And having a pest control company, if you're a hard worker, is a known quantity as a moneymaker. That if you set up a company well, you're good with customers, you realize that it's a service business that you just happen to kill bugs in, then starting a small business as a pest control operator is the easiest it's ever been. There's so much information, so much education now. Our companies are always putting on education opportunities. And just reach out to the folks that you know.
Definitely.
Yeah. And even though Nick works for NYSIS and I work for JT Eaton, you know, we're not uncontactable for questions. Mm-hmm. There's entomologists everywhere, and we love to help everyone. You know, we don't just help our companies and their issues. Email entomologists, email professors doing research that you're interested in. I mean, people who are passionate about what they do love to share knowledge, and this knowledge is free and it's out there. There's publications that you can find for free. You can go to extension offices, which also generally have entomologists working there that can advise companies, advise manufacturers, anybody for free on insects that they're dealing with, pests also in general. These are all resources all around you that, and if you're interested in becoming an entomologist, you have a specialty passion for insects and you want to learn more and go really in depth, that's always something you can do. You don't have to be the age of going into undergrad. You can do it at any point. We have students in all ages, all walks of life who are like, wait a second, I wish I knew more. You can always do that.
The Associate Certified Entomologist Program done through ESA. How many ACEs are in every pest control company? So many. And all of them are every bit as passionate, every bit as interested as people that had formal schooling for it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's fun to learn more. That's also why, you know, CEUs are so great. Because not only are we making sure that technicians are staying on track, keeping up with changes in the world, but they also, that's an opportunity to get to learn really fun stuff. I don't have a license, but I go to a lot of conferences because those classes teach me so much. And I have a master's degree, but yet I am learning constantly from everyone. I mean, I have technicians come up to me and tell me things that I never knew. And it's just like a plethora of resources that don't just have to come from academia. They can come to academia from the industry as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, guys, I just want to say thanks a lot for coming on. This was very informative and I had an awesome time. So Nick, Isabel, is there anything you want to say before we close out here?
I would just say, obviously, thank you so much for having us on. I do like the NYSIS podcast. I thought it was a great idea when Were you just pitching it at IRG earlier this year?
No. So when I got hired on to be a graphic designer, I said, hey, have you guys ever thought about doing a podcast? I think that'd be an awesome idea. And of course, Lee was like, yes, let's do it. So
if a boon to Lee is that if there is any kind of idea that he sees the passion and the kind of the prospect behind it, he'll support you 100%. And that's awesome. Of course, as a closing note, there's, like we just mentioned, there's so many opportunities to get connected to this industry, especially if you're a young professional or especially if you're looking for a change in profession. There's so many ways to get connected. Please take advantage of those. Of course, you can reach out to me. You can reach out to the nicest crew as well. And then I'm sure Isabel will plug some opportunities as well. But thanks for having me on. This has been awesome.
Yeah, thank you, Jason, so much. This has been so much fun. Have me anytime, unless you're like, Izzy, you got to get out of here. You got to go do your work. But I had a blast, and I love talking about my passion, which is insects, but also it's helping people. So any way to spread that information and have fun with two awesome people, it was great. And yeah, anyone can contact me at any point. Just, you know, try to get the basic outline of the insect and I'll try to go from there. Yeah.
If you're just looking for ID, by all means, use us. But we have some picture specifications and we'll tell you if you're not making them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you very much. This has been awesome. Thanks for coming on, Isabel. This has been great.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much. I loved it.
We get to make some pretty cool friends at shows and at all of those industry things. And very, very glad, glad that JT Eaton was down in Dallas.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That was such a great opportunity. And, you know, now Nick and I get to share our extreme nerdy point of views on every insect we see. And it's been great.
Yep. And sometimes they're very different point of views, like a brown recluse is being cute to her. But
hey, see, I know.
Exactly. Brown recluse specifically.
It's so cute. You know, it's got the little violin on its back. It's precious.
That is actually pretty cool. And it's nice that they give you a way to identify them. Same with black widows.
Yeah.
Black widows are kind of interesting. Yeah. They're super soft bodied. They pop really easily. Like if you flick them, they kind of disappear. They're kind of fun.
That's good to know. Next time I see one, I'll flick it. But yellow jackets, like, you know, I said they're out throughout your day, and you reminded me that they have this whole life
got their
that
day
they
too.
Have to work for. They're busy. Maybe I'm ruining their day.
Even if they're not like bees, and we just really enjoy eating their puke.
Think about that. I could go for some honey.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. But then don't see it as honey. See it as bee puke.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much. You guys have a great day.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
See ya. Bye.